Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caroline.
Caroline, I'm going to do things a little backward and start the podcast with a listener email.
Whoa.
I know. Hold on to your hats, folks. So we got this email recently from Emma, and she's 19 and in college, and she wrote us with a request. She says, first, the backstory. My roommate and I discovered the popular band One Direction at the beginning of the school year. Neither of us had ever been huge boy band fans, but now we have more than 25 posters of these five boys up in our dorm room. We have tickets to a concert of theirs over the summer, and we have wasted countless hours watching videos of them and looking at their faces. We also managed to get a few more of our friends to enthuse about them. What I'd like to know is why boy bands such as One Direction get to be so popular. Back in the 90s, we had Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, and there have been many that have popped up and disappeared through time. But why? What makes them so appealing? Why don't they last very long? And what is it about them that pulls girls and guys in so much? I usually pride myself in being level-headed and mature, but put a picture of 1D in front of me, and I turn into a squealing 12-year-old girl. What's up with that? Oh, Emma.
I don't know. Short answer, soft masculinity and comfortable homoeroticism. But we'll get to that later.
And the podcast is over. Yeah, first of all, Emma, thank you for your email. This episode is dedicated to you and your roommate and Harry Styles of One Direction.
And his hair.
And his hair. And his very large hair. So we're not going to be able to talk about all of the boy bands.
Yeah, sorry. We're going to go ahead and apologize and say, please don't key our cars.
Yeah, well, I was live tweeting some of the research, and thanks to everyone who tweeted some boy band suggestions for me to listen to. But we're going to hit on the big names out there. And unfortunately, we can't even get into the entire history of boy bands. I mean, obviously, we will hit on the Beatles and such, but we really want to get into the more modern boy band era. But first, let's talk about how boy bands are totally back, Caroline.
Yeah, and how we even knew this was happening. I'm perpetually out of the loop as far as music goes, particularly if it is pop music and boy bands. So back in 2012, spring 2012, One Direction became the first British group to top the Billboard 200 chart, a feat that not even the Beatles could pull off. They sold 176,000 copies of their album Up All Night in its first week of release. Meanwhile, The Wanted, I'm learning so much from all this research. The Wanted had a top 10 hit single, and the group Mindless Behavior's album debuted in the top 10.
Yeah, and speaking to the New York Times in 2012 about The Wanted in One Direction, Sharon Datzer, who is the program director of Z100 in New York, said, quote, "Boy bands are so back in such a big way. I've been saying it for about a month now. Music is always very cyclical. We had the New Kids on the Block time and the NSYNC Backstreet Boys time, and now it's that time again." And some people also attribute the popularity of Justin Bieber for getting producers thinking again about, oh, wait, young females listen to young boys singing and they buy lots of things. And one of those music moguls who had a big hand in bringing the boy band back in such a big way is Simon Cowell, formerly from American Idol, and now with the X Factor over in the UK. And what he did was take these five boys who competed on the X Factor, and he was like, "You all should be in a band together," and put them all together, and they competed, but only came in third, I believe. But then he was like, "It doesn't matter. Harry Styles, your hair is going to take you straight to the top of the Billboard charts." And so he signed them to his music label, and it's been pandemonium ever since.
Right, but they came on the scene a little differently than did Lou Pearlman's masterminding of Backstreet Boys NSYNC. It's the reversal of that pattern, you know, of releasing a single on the radio first, then taking them to the U.S. Instead, the label mounted a four-month marketing campaign to build a fan base through social media. They were very sneaky. They asked fans to sign petitions and enter video competitions to win a concert in their town, and I believe Dallas won the One Direction concert. But yeah, it worked. Facebook followers shot up. Requests poured into radio stations to play the songs before they even had the albums. So yeah, not quite the same as the 90s bands.
So even though One Direction, you know, is using social media, obviously in a way that wouldn't have even been possible for NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, the One Direction songwriter, Carl Falk, admits that he stole the 1D sound from Backstreet Boys, claiming the new generation of boy band fans is too young to even remember.
Which, wait a second.
I feel so old. I do have gray hairs coming in, and I think that I sprouted a few more when I read that.
Wait, yeah, because Emma, I think, even though she is a college student, she's old enough to remember Backstreet Boys.
Well, sure, she might remember Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, and of course everyone knows who Justin Timberlake is.
Right.
But does she know all the words to Backstreet's Back like this podcast co-host does?
I know, I've had Backstreet Boys songs in my head all week. One more similar thing that still persists is racial dynamics. Kristen, in One Direction, the ethnic bad boy role that managers have crafted over the years is filled by Zayn Malik.
Yeah, this was something that was posted about on the blog Racialicious, talking about how Zayn actually pulled his Twitter feed for, I think it was only a day, but still he took it down because he said that he had received so many racial slurs. He's half Pakistani and Muslim, and they've never tried to hide that fact at all. But people, you know, have made horrible comments to him to the point that he took his stuff down. But this is something, the whole thing of having the darker skinned boy band member being cast as the mysterious one is the same kind of thing that happened with, say, AJ, who's Latino, in Backstreet Boys.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because I was gonna cite that example, but I wasn't sure which band he was in.
It's Backstreet!
Oh my god, I'm sorry!
Come on.
Okay, well, so then we have a whole issue of whether these new bands are edgier, whether they're living on the edge more, or whether they're maybe a little bit softer. A story from Reuters in April 2012 argued that yes, they are edgier, because The Wanted is trying to set themselves apart by being uncensored about their drinking and partying. And of course, they use the "we all play instruments" argument. And they actually are managed by Bieber's manager.
Yeah, and I will say, watching The Wanted's video for "Glad You Came," and yes, that is a double entendre, that's showing them just partying on a beach, I believe in Ibiza, and just, you know, being just really young and rowdy. Obviously, they're going for that bad boy image. But with One Direction, though, Amanda Hess from Slate and Alyssa Rosenberg at Think Progress and also The Atlantic would argue that, not so much.
Yeah, Amanda Hess's theory is that boy bands nowadays are less explicitly sexual because today's young women are freed to see sex, love, and friendship as more interconnected. She says post-hookup culture, young women's relationships with men are more fun and casual and equitable.
Yeah, and on her Slate post, she has all these screenshots to compare of videos from NSYNC and Backstreet where they're all, you know, clenching their fist and looking very pained and anguished because their love is so intense. Whereas One Direction, you know, they're just bebopping around. I know. I'm suddenly 85 yeah. in this podcast.
Where's your butterscotch candy? Alyssa Rosenberg over at The Atlantic does argue that they are less edgy and more lovey-dovey. She says 1D and The Wanted espouse a love-beats-all philosophy that's actually squeakier, cleaner, and simpler than that of the generation of manufactured male teen idols that preceded them a decade ago.
Yeah, she says even for The Wanted, you know, who are going for the whole bad boy thing, just want to get home to the girlfriends at the end of the day. And she makes a good point about how One Direction's biggest hit, What Makes You Beautiful, is, quote, so worshipful that it feels smothering. And I do agree. I mean, I could see, though, if I were 12 and watching these boys frolic around on a beach telling me that I'm prettier than I actually know that I am, that I would totally get on board with all of that. But it is kind of funny. I mean, to the point to where they're like, the way you flip your hair drives me bonkers. My quote, not theirs.
And then you just start obsessively flipping your hair.
Yeah. And they would say, though, that 90s bands, in a very 90s kind of way, were more earnest.
Yeah, she said that their songs were full of doubt about the possibility of lasting relationships, hence the clenched fists and anguished faces versus the more casual, devil may care, I have big hair attitude of Harry Styles.
But at the same time, though, we can't talk about boy bands and not mention that some of the songs and some of the lyrics are a tad not so amazing and uplifting when you really listen to them. And not just for the more modern ones, even going back to the Monkees' Daydream Believer, which I love.
Yeah, it's very
catchy. I do like that song.
And yeah, Rosenberg over in her post on thinkprogress.org talks about the Monkees using condescending dismissiveness in Daydream Believer, something that had never occurred to me. But she cites the quote, Daydream Believer and a homecoming queen. She doesn't have any real concerns, does she, Monkees?
Yeah, she also says that the Jackson 5 song Stop, The Love You Save is slut-shaming, that NSYNC's girlfriend is textbook negging with lyrics such as, does he even know you're alive? And on Backstreet's Back, the song that I can't get out of my head right now, is odd and needy and the inverse of wooing. And I had a couple of more examples, too. To me, the one that stands out the most from my personal boy band experience is from the band Five. And they had one hit, Baby When the Lights Go Out. And I can sing all of the chorus. I will not do it.
Okay.
But it's, maybe I should do it. But it's so creepy. It's talking about how when they're at a party and all the lights go out, babe, I swear you will succumb to me. So baby, come to me when the lights go out. Where it's like, whoa, Five, hey, take a step back. And then even One Direction in their song, Little Things, they say, you never want to know how much you weigh. You still have to squeeze into your jeans, but you're perfect to me. Which is kind of backhanded as well. And then, of course, in The Wanted's Glad You Came, I mean, kind of everything about it. But also the standout line is, I'll hand you another drink. Drink it if you can.
Oh, my God.
So just daring young women to get wasted.
These are, their audience is such young girls, though.
I know.
Says the scandalized 85-year-old sitting across from you. Maybe I should bring my hard candy to the next episode.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
But okay, so let's, you know, we mentioned the Monkees. Let's look back at some of the history briefly of boy bands and where they came from. One major aspect of boy bands from the beginning has been dancing. The All had a piece on this in May 2012. They talked about how dancing among boy groups was introduced by Motown genius Berry Gordy, who hired vaudeville performer Charlie Atkins to teach his top acts like The Temptations, Smokey Robinson, and The Four Tops some dance moves.
Yeah, and right there with the mentions of Temptations, Four Tops, Smokey Robinson, we have the first kind of tie-in to where these mostly all-white boy bands of today take a lot of cues from black male groups of not only Motown, but then moving up into R&B, which we'll touch on in a minute. But yeah, the dancing has always been a big thing up until, though, these most modern boy bands, which, I mean, to me, like, yeah, was it kind of cheesy, all of the choreographed dance moves and dance outfits?
Dance outfits.
That the boy bands of our day would always do. Yeah, but no more for One Direction.
What do they do on stage then? If they, because I know, like, The Wanted plays instruments, but.
Well, on stage they might have more choreographed numbers, but in their videos, they're just prancing around.
Prancing?
They're pouring, you know, they're doing keg stands. Not actually keg stands, but they're drinking out of Solo cups. Wink, wink.
Maybe it's lemonade.
I don't think The Wanted even wants you to think that it's lemonade, because they are just such bad boys. But going back, though, to the dance moves, all of that Motown dancing set the precedent that carried into the 70s, when even boy bands that played instruments, such as the Osmonds and Jackson 5, incorporated dancing into live sets and TV appearances. And speaking of TV appearances, Caroline.
Yeah, February 9th, 1964, the Beatles perform on Ed Sullivan. And oh my God, the internet will yell at us so much for saying that the Beatles are a boy band because they weren't formed by some mastermind like Simon Cowell. You know, they met organically playing instruments at school and in clubs. But they did have those mop tops and dressed the same and were, you know, coordinated on stage.
And they inspired subsequent boy bands such as the Monkees that were straight up assembled for a television show around Davy Jones, who recently passed away.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P. Davy Jones. And that became a blueprint for future boy bands of the more manufactured sort that we would think of today. And then in the 70s, we have bands like Jackson 5 that in 1970 had four number one hit singles. And then in the 70s, we also have the very take home to mom Osmonds.
Mm-hmm.
They were a clean cut Mormon quintet. I believe Donny Osmond was a part of the Osmonds. And in 1977, I think this has to be the longest running boy band of all time get started.
Yeah, Menudo starts its 32-year stint in Puerto Rico. And of course, their most famous member, to me anyway, is Ricky Martin.
Yes.
He joined in the 80s, I believe, when he was 13.
And he beat out Howie, who ended up the Backstreet Boys for a gig. Now, who got the better deal?
Interesting.
I don't know. I'd say Ricky Martin.
Well, okay, so we mentioned how, you know, African-American groups, doo-wop groups, Berry Gordy, and we mentioned how these groups really kind of paved the way for these white boy bands to come along. Well, one of those trailblazers in 1983 is New Edition. It's a Boston R&B group credited with the boy band crazes of the next 20 years.
Yeah, Candy Girl, I wish could be playing right now in the background because it is such a good song. But they were groomed by this guy named Maurice Starr, who later developed another Boston group you might have heard of called New Kids on the Block.
Swoon. Jordan was my favorite.
Yeah, in 1984, Starr basically takes the New Edition model and is like, hey, I'm going to do this with a group of Boston white kids. And so he puts together NKOTB with Jordan, Joey, Donnie, Danny, and John. And I was too young to be a real diehard New Kids fan, but my
I'm only a year older than you.
I wasn't.
It wasn't in your sphere.
It was not in my sphere, but it was in my older sister's sphere. Yeah. And I remember she got this Coke brand, New Kids poster in the mail, and she was so excited about it. It was her prized possession. And I can't remember who her favorite was, but anyway, it took a little while, though, for New Kids to ascend to stardom. It wasn't until their second album in 1988 was released, Hanging Tough.
Oh, my God. Yeah, sorry. I totally interrupted you to sing that. But it was released that year, and it sold 17 million copies.
And in 1990, their album Step by Step went triple platinum. But a year later, we have the first album release from another very influential boy band, Boys to Men. They released Coolie High Harmony, and they would go on to win 4 Grammys and release more than 10 multi-platinum albums and get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, so in 1993, skipping forward a little bit, Lou Pearlman, famous manager and con man, formed the Backstreet Boys, which I never knew. They were named after a flea market in Orlando. So he held auditions in Orlando, and this pretty much sets off our modern era of crazy boy band fans and everything.
Yeah, because Pearlman essentially saw what Starr was doing and all the money that he was making from New Edition and then New Kids and was like, hey, I could totally do this, which he also said later in his career when he started a Ponzi scheme. That's for another podcast, maybe.
Right, yeah. The story about Lou Pearlman goes on forever, and it's fascinating and creepy. But in 1994, a song that I could not get out of my head for approximately 3 years debuted at number one. That's R&B group All for One, I Swear.
I Swear.
Oh, my God. I, like, couldn't listen to it for the rest of the 90s because it would get in my head. So in 1995, Pearlman turns around and forms NSYNC and sends them on a European tour to get all of that promotion before he brought them over to the U.S. And let me tell you, the Germans love some Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. In 1996, we have Atlanta Quartet 112, who got their start on Diddy's Bad Boy Records. And really, I mean, you'll notice, it's very apparent that these are just, that's one of just a few African-American groups listed in all this.
Well, yeah, because basically these white boy bands just took the blueprint established by these earlier R&B groups and were like, oh, we will sing to these legions of young girls. Now, in 1997, though, this one has a special place in my heart, and it was Hanson. Hanson came out. They're less traditional because they're three brothers. They're like the early Jonas Brothers.
Right.
And, of course, their song was Mbop. And I thought that they were so cool because they were homeschooled. And I was like, wow, they're just like me. They're weird, just like me.
Except they're millionaires.
But by this point, in 1997, this is when Backstreet's blowing up. The NSYNC rivalry with Backstreet is picking up because, you know, they're starting to blow up. 98 Degrees comes out and releases its first album, which was signed to Motown Records, interestingly, in a throwback there. And so, yeah, in the late 90s, we have the reign of the boy bands. And all the music critics are subsequently pulling their hair out because all of the hit songs are these kind of bubblegum pop, super produced pieces of, well, they would say music trash because it's like, oh, Backstreet, that's not music. Whereas a lot of these, you know, very talented vocal performers are saying, hey, we're doing, you know, we're making good music, right?
Yeah, just because Lou Pearlman is pulling the strings doesn't mean that we're not good musicians.
Well, and that's a question, though. The whole immediate dismissal of boy bands is something that Gail Wald looked into in her paper, Teeny Bopper Music and the Girling of Boy Bands. It was published in the journal Genders in 2002. And she raises the question of whether we think that boy bands are automatically just kind of stupid because their fans are girls.
Yeah, she talks about a definite gendered hierarchy of high and low popular culture that specifically devalues the music consumed by teenage girls. And she says it's based on the notions of fickleness, superficiality, and aesthetic bankruptcy of the material forms that girls' desires take in popular culture. You know, because we're buying sleeping bags with the New Kids on the Block on them, or we're buying all these posters of the Jonas Brothers and things like that.
Well, she also points out, too, with this whole girling of the boy band, that they symbolically feminize the male vocal groups that have the special appeal for young female consumers. We think of them as something for girls. And in driving home this point about how dismissive we are of boy bands, she cites a piece by New York Times music writer John Perriellas. And this was back from the Backstreet days. He wrote, "When it's directed at males, that squeal signifies romantic fantasy while it tests out some newly active hormonal responses. Directed at females, it's a squeal of sisterly solidarity and fashion approval, and it's drowning out anything more mature audiences had in mind."
I have to give an eye roll. I understand. I'm not a big boy band person. I never was, aside from New Kids on the Block and Boys to Men. Let's be real. But, I mean, we've always had these bands, and it just seems like rehashing old gripes when music critics are just like, ugh, gross, little girls like it. It's like, all right, come on, we've always had boy bands.
Well, and then it gets into, you know, the bigger questions of the whole, you know, selling out of the music, if it's really music. I mean, the fact, you know, today with The Wanted, that they, and with One Direction, that they have a stronger hand in the music that they play and produce, even though all of the songs that One Direction has written among themselves, none of them have been released as singles. But it is kind of interesting when you step back and think about why we tend to dislike boy band music so much. And then also this idea of the girlish type of masculinity. It's like it takes all of this sexuality that they're obviously exhibiting, mm-hmm, and somehow making it quote unquote safe.
Right. Well, they are, she writes that they're taking black performance styles of the 80s, which were more frank and staunchly heterosexual, and makes it, yeah, like you said, softer and safer. And fans use that as a way to negotiate their own fluid gender and sexual desires.
Well, and that also brings up this racial question as well that some critics have brought up in terms of how white these crazy popular boy band empires are, in that, you know, well, are they quote unquote safer or more sellable to these legions of female fans because they are white, because we still are uncomfortable with that black masculinity because it would inherently be too frank or too strong. So that's something also to think about in all of this.
Yeah.
And kind of how, like, with which we brought up at the top of the podcast with One Direction, how a lot of times the darker skinned members of groups are characterized as the mysterious bad boy. Why is that? Why does that have to be?
I don't know. Well, so we mentioned that, you know, fans are using this softer version of masculinity to kind of figure out their own raging hormones. Sociologist Mark McCormick for the Oxford University Press blog in July 2012 wrote about One Direction in particular redefining modern masculinity, saying that their open displays of emotion actually helped to make them famous. He said there's no homophobia among these young guys. They actively thanked their gay fans and even performed at a gay club in London. He said that these kids model and mirror the gendered behaviors of today's youth, and they're part of a significant change in attitudes toward homosexuality.
Yeah, and in the same way that, you know, a lot of times when we think about girls' crushes on boy bands, they're assumed to be kind of a way for girls to negotiate these first feelings of their blossoming sexuality. But in, you know, and that's in a very kind of heteronormative box, but in the same way, boy bands have always had gay boy fans as well. There was a 2000 article in The Advocate talking about this, and they cited Mike Glatz, who at the time was the managing editor of the magazine XY, which was for gay youth. And he said, all these bands have always had young gay admirers. Now there are media outlets that represent young gay culture and provide an opportunity for young gay people to be more vocal. And some say, too, that since everything is driven so much on social media now and all of these websites, that that facilitates even more, I guess, adoration among gay fans that can, you know, access not just the music, but also, you know, all of the different kind of rituals that girls have with boy bands, including fanfic. Pop slash fiction is apparently huge, and apparently a lot with One Direction, to the point that one girl who wrote one story about a love triangle between her and two members of One Direction got a book deal from it, from like Penguin Books. Anyway.
Man, you can make money off of these boy bands.
Yeah, you can.
I had no idea. Well, Jennifer Margaret Smith over at a blog from the University of Wisconsin in April 2012 wrote about what she called comfortable homoeroticism and called the interpersonal relationships, the interactions between the guys of bands like One Direction, as a variation on the bromance trend, which we've talked about. Very, very bro-y, and yet these guys are a lot more comfortable exhibiting their affection for each other. She said that, quote, they can play with their queerness because their heterosexuality is constantly reinforced, both in the reports of their personal lives, like when Harry Styles dated Taylor Swift, and in their aggressively heteronormative song lyrics.
Yeah, she talks about how they hug, grope, fall asleep on each other constantly, pretend to kiss each other for laughs, and even joke about queer relationships between them. So, you know, this is another way that, you know, I kind of like the idea, though, of One Direction at least being more open about all of that, mm-hmm. as being kind of that bridge between childhood and sexual maturity, not just for female fans, but for male fans as well. I think that's great that they openly thank their gay fans and know that they're a strong part of their fan base.
Yeah.
So even though songs like What Makes You Beautiful might not have the most lyrical depth, there's obviously a lot within boy band history and, you know, why they exist and why they do hold such appeal that, you know, that we can kind of learn about, I don't know, like girlhood, boyhood.
Well, yeah, I mean, I honestly never, I mean, well, cause I just don't think about boy bands, but I never thought about the gendered aspects, the racial aspects, mm-hmm. the fact that, you know, just like they repackaged Elvis as a white version of black music back in the day, they're doing the same thing, and they have been doing the same thing for decades with these boy groups.
But my only question, though, is that in the same way that, you know, boy bands seem to facilitate this kind of opening of girlish sexuality, if that makes sense, I want to know how music, or if music, facilitates the same thing in boys. And not just gay boys, I'm talking about, like, when we think of more boy music, you know?
Or is quote-unquote boy music considered neutral and therefore has no effect on boys, but because boy bands are for girls, then it has this effect and the boy bands themselves are feminized.
Because of that gendered hierarchy in pop culture. Astute observation, Caroline.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's now time to turn it over to our listeners and see what they think about boy bands. Who's your favorite? Do you find any other creepy lyrics as well? We would be happy to hear about. Do you have any boy band feedback in particular you'd like, Caroline?
Who was your favorite in any of them?
In any of them at all.
Who was your favorite boy bander?
And if you're in a boy band, Harry Styles, if you're listening, you can go ahead and write in.
How heavy is your hair?
How much product is in that? .com is where you can send your email.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
And now we got a couple of letters in response to our episode on tampons and toxic shock syndrome.
This one's from Jamie. She said, when I started using tampons, my mom frequently warned me not to wear them to bed because I would get toxic shock and die. I know, aren't moms the worst? I never asked any questions about what it was or why I would die. These warnings didn't stop me from wearing them to bed, but rather scared me into thinking that I would die in my sleep. I'm 25 now and sometimes still worry about this silent killer as I saw it. But now, thanks to you gals, I think I can sleep a bit easier. I think it's craziness that I never researched this on my own or even asked questions before. Thank goodness for you girls. Great job. Thanks. And thank you, Jamie. I'm glad we could help, and I hope you're sleeping better after all these years.
Well, I've got one here from Allison about a bit of a tampon horror story as well. And she says, like Caroline, my mom never gave me the talk, and instead I got to read her romance novels. So, I was on vacation with a friend and her mom was at the beach. Of course, periods have perfect timing and I started right then and I was all in a tizzy. What to do because you can't wear a pad and a bathing suit? So I decided it was time to use a tampon. As you might imagine, since we didn't talk about sex, my mom never talked to me about tampons, so I had no clue how to use them. Cue me in a porta potty in the parking lot by the beach trying to insert my first tampon for 20 agonizing minutes. I'm in tears because I can't figure out this labyrinth called a vagina, and I'm shaking because I'm nervous and embarrassed that my friend and her mom are waiting on me. Oh, it was terrible. I finally made myself calm down and reread the instructions for the 12th time and figured out that I wasn't doing the whole angle thing and just basically stabbing myself repeatedly, trying to shove this piece of cardboard into me at a 90-degree angle to the ground. Insertion complete, I finally exited that porta potty of terror and went and had fun at the beach. Yay, happy ending. Sorry if this was a little more info than you wanted. Love the show! And I loved that story.
Oh, I'm glad you figured it out. Oh, I sympathize.
Yeah, me too. The first time is usually a memorable time for all of the wrong reasons. So if you have any tampon horror stories or boy band love stories to send our way, momstuff@discovery.com is our email address. You can also message us on Facebook. Tweet us at momstuffpodcast. And while you're at it, you can follow us on Tumblr at stuffmomnevertoldyou.tumblr.com. And as always, you can make yourself smarter by heading over to our website. It's howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because Boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.